Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back by popular demand, we have with us today an author of a book called Sail the World, which describes everything you need to know to circumnavigate the globe. This is available with Amazon. You can buy it anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. And as ESPN Radio reaches Scandinavia, New Zealand, you can do that with Amazon wherever you are. Our guest today is Eric Reichardt. His career was in the automotive industry. He was president of New Venture Gear, vice president of powertrain operations at Chrysler, CEO of Accustar, and CEO of Chrysler Mexico. At Ford, he worked in product planning, including 6 years in Europe, where he oversaw the implementation of the Ford Fiesta. I believe you said before that it made $1 billion for Ford, the Fiesta.
Well, it cost $1 billion to produce it. They made it by then.
Okay. Very good. Well, a great leader in industry and an author of the book, Sail the World. So why don't we talk first about this book that is available on Amazon.com. Tell us about this book and the trip you went around the world. What was it all about? Eric Reichardt.
Well, it was a exciting and a life-changing adventure. I spent 15 years with the boat, but I took being an engineer in my basic background, we did, and a product planner. I took 3 years to investigate and find out the right kind of boat with the right equipment to do the job of sailing across oceans. And the book imparts all of the knowledge that I gained, not only in planning for the boat, but in actually accomplishing the circumnavigation. Things have been going pretty well since it was published. I'm getting royalty checks regularly, every month, and sales have been proceeding. We've given several lectures and talks on it. I did one at the House of Lords in London, England.
Right.
At the Circumnavigators Club. Did one in Sydney, Australia at the Royal Sydney Yacht Squadron. And also Michigan North Cape Yacht Club. And I will be giving one next month in Michigan to a women's group at Project Hope Women's Division, which my wife is president of right now. And that's going to be a different presentation to address the concerns that women have in terms of voting.
What tips do you have for those who might want to circumnavigate the globe in a boat? I believe your boat was a 55-foot boat. And what tips would you have? Because I remember when we did the one taping you mentioned, I believe you were in a terrible, terrible storm, and you were quite nervous if you would survive or not. So what tips do you have for the international sailor?
Well, as I said, first thing, you must select a boat that can take the take all the rigors of the ocean. The ocean is unforgiving, and one must be mentally prepared to be self-sufficient when you're in the middle of the ocean. In most cases, you cannot assume, you cannot dial 911 and some no one's going to come. You're too far away to be rescued in most cases, and if you're in a severe storm, they can't rescue anyway. So you have to be self-sufficient, you have to have the proper equipment, you have to have the proper knowledge and skill base in terms of weather, geography, currents, and most important, all the equipment on board your boat. You have to, in my mind, you have to be able to perform minor repairs on every bit of equipment. And I did repair the engine, the generator, the steering.
And you did this yourself?
I did myself in the middle of the ocean while underway, which is a challenge again because the boat's moving while you're trying to do this. But those kind of skills are required, but once you have that under your capability, then it's going to be an absolutely wonderful time.
Very good, very good. Great learning experience, a little risky. Now, you and your wife are involved with a group called the St. George's Society, and you had a wonderful dinner in Palm Beach, Florida with the royal chef to Princess Diana. It was a lovely event. You raised a lot of money from charity. You had a few hundred civic and business leaders at this dinner. Let's talk about the St. George's Society. What do they stand for? Why did you host this with your lovely wife?
Well, the St. George's Society of Palm Beach is an organization that's oriented towards the English, those people who enjoy English tradition and values join. We have speakers and other events throughout the year, but one of the most major events we had was the one with Chef Darren McGrady, who was the chef for the Queen as well as Princess Diana, and for 15 years. And the event was at the Colony Hotel. We had it sold out, and the menu was specific selections that the Queen and Princess Di and the boys liked. So it was a culinary feat as well. And he had a very enjoyable talk about all of his relations with the royalties.
Yeah, it was a very lovely evening, very enlightening of the lifestyle of Princess Di and the food that he prepared for her for many years, and also his later career in Texas. So it was a very interesting program. Let's talk a little bit more about this royal chef, Darren McGrady. Let's talk a little bit about his career and his warmth and affection for Princess Di. Apparently, he was very close to her because when the separation divorce took place, he chose to go with Princess Di and be her sole chef. So it was a touching relationship that they had for many years. And your wife, who chaired this dinner with you, told how he was heartbroken when she passed. So let's talk a little bit about Darren McGrady.
Yes, Chef McGrady was his first job was at the Savoy Hotel in London, and then he was able to secure a position at the Buckingham Palace. But as a member of there were more than one chef, obviously. There's, I think, at 20 at one point at Buckingham Palace. But they traveled with the royal family, including Balmoral, Windsor Castle. He even worked at point on the ship Britannia, the royal ship Britannia. Mm-hmm. So he had a long and varied association with the royal family, and as you say, particularly with Princess Diana, and I guess he with the boys too, because he keeps referring to them as the boys, but of course now they're their heirs to the throne.
Well, it was a very captivating evening, and the 200 people there were very much in awe and very interested, and they had a great deal of questions for Princess Di's personal chef, Darren McGrady. For those who just tuned in to ESPN AM 1520, if you're listening in Buffalo, which is the hometown of Eric Reichert's father, Buffalo, New York, where we're headquartered, or listening in Washington or Manhattan or Montreal, drop us a note. We'd like to hear from you. Please write to Brian Rusk, ESPN Radio, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. We always read cards and letters from our Canadian and European listeners. Special thanks for those who called regarding our recent guests, Fletcher Dawes and Joe Shearer. They're forefathers were the mayor of West Palm Beach, Florida, and the owners of the well-known Testa's restaurant in Palm Beach, Florida, and Bell Harbor, Maine. We also thank those who called regarding Todd Chatkin about mini dental implants. A little bit more information about Eric.
Now let me just say that relative to the dining royalty event, although I was co-chairman with my wife, Susan, Lady Susan, she did most of the work, I got to admit,
right.
And she's been raising funds for charities her whole lifetime, both here and in Europe, and she did an absolute magnificent job of organizing that event.
It was wonderful. It was low-key, it was elegant, and very enlightening. We have a plug here in the hometown of Eric Reichert's father. Western New Yorkers love their traditions, and the AMPO Legal has been writing about Polish-American traditions and events for over 50 years. News and features from a Polish-American perspective can be found in this weekly newspaper, as well as recipes and a calendar of events. Don't miss out on the next cultural presentation or polka dance by reading the AMPO Legal. The AMPO Legal is available in many Tops and Wegmans stores for home delivery. Call 716-835-9454. That's 716-835-9454 to have the latest news from Poland and Polonia in your mailbox each week. Now some more information about our guest, Eric Reichert. After retirement, he had a sailboat constructed and then sailed around the world and lived on board 6 years. He has published a book, which is available on Amazon.com. called Sail the World, which describes everything you need to know to circumnavigate the globe. Our guest, Eric Reichert, on the Rusk Report on ESPN AM 1520. Now, you worked for many years for Ford and Chrysler. Ford stock is fair. I own some of the stock. It's been around $10 or $11 a share. I hope you have more shares than I have. But anyway, they're getting more into electric cars. They did not take the government loans when many auto industries did take the bailouts. Ford did not. So let's talk about Ford Motor Company. You worked there for years. Let's learn of your experience and where you see Ford today.
Okay. Well, my expertise was in product planning, which is the group that's designated to develop and plan the cars and trucks and products of the future. Mm-hmm. And I had several very interesting assignments in my career there, 18 years. At one point in the early 70s, I was head of advanced product planning, and advanced meant anything that wasn't in the current lineup. And we did have a flying car, which we were looking at. And as you know, Ford ran Willow Run during the war and produced B-24 bombers. So mm-hmm. Ford was familiar with producing airplanes. But for a variety of reasons, I didn't feel that was a project which would lead to much future. I was driving an all-electric vehicle in 1970, far before Tesla or any of these other people around today. The battery, the whole issue has been batteries. At that time, the only battery we had was lead acid, but we had a unique system of supplying lead acid batteries through the center of the car.
Okay.
I guess my point is that Ford has been in the forefront of testing new technologies all along.
Batteries were not as good 40 years ago, though. They did not have the strength or the charge of the batteries today.
Yes, the lead acids don't have the charge density of the lithium batteries of today, and consequently, we couldn't get the range. The vehicle performed very adequately,
mm-hmm.
And was very interesting to drive, but we just couldn't proceed on that basis forward. I also worked on people movers, and actually Ford built one demonstration people mover in Dearborn,
mm-hmm.
but again, it was not really something I thought would be valuable going forward because of its limited footprint. But I also developed the Fiesta car.
Well, that was your major accomplishment in your career, isn't it, the Ford Fiesta?
Yes, and that car was designed for Europe, but we developed it in Dearborn, Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and it was a unique project because it was a new market segment. B class is where our terminology was. It was for new expanding into new markets, or more heavily into France, Spain, and Italy.
Mm-hmm.
We required all new facilities, plants. We built a whole new facility in Spain, and it was a new configuration. It was a front-wheel drive car, which mm-hmm. was the first front-wheel drive car which Ford produced, and to get that approved, we had to convince Henry Ford II that it was valuable for Ford going forward because their market share of the world market would continue to decline unless they had a B-class car. So the program was $1 billion for the program in total, and it was a little sensitive because the prior major program that Ford did was the Edsel. And as you know,
it didn't do very well.
And that didn't do very well. So here I was back pitching to Henry Ford II that they ought to spend $1 billion. And this is in 1972. Spend $1 billion to produce this new vehicle, which, as I said, was new market, new segment, new countries, and he approved it. But
that a tough sell after the Edsel was named after his brother, wasn't it?
His son,
and it was a flop. It seemed to have futuristic styling, but nobody, I think, liked the name of the car, and they didn't like the looks of the car. And was it around for a year?
Several years.
But it was a flop.
Yes. So ultimately, they dropped.
So how was it for you to convince after the failure of this revolutionary product with the Edsel to get Henry Ford to go forth with the Ford Fiesta? How tough a sell was it?
Well, it was obviously a tough sell, but I think we had all of the facts and figures, if you will, behind us, and we demonstrated clearly the potential. In fact, we had we did market research on all new
mm-hmm.
products.
Right.
And we had one unique one. Normally you do it in a city, in a country, but since we're dealing with many countries, we held it in Lausanne, Switzerland, and flew people in from, you know, Spain, Italy, France, Britain, and to review the models. So we had good data on how people reacted to the vehicle, etc. And by the way, these many years later, Fiesta is number one Ford vehicle in Britain today. So the Fiesta has had very long legs. We brought the program in under budget, both variable cost and fixed cost.
Now, the Fiesta was sort of a smaller, better performing car, a little bit ahead of its time, wasn't it?
Yes, and it was front-wheel drive, as I said, which was the first front-wheel drive Ford produced. It was
in the world, the first.
No. There were several front-wheel drives in Europe at the time.
But this is the first that Ford was.
First Ford made. Which, you know, is given that your whole history has been rear-wheel drive.
Right.
You know, that is requires a different thinking.
Well, I know where in your father's hometown of Buffalo, front-wheel and all-wheel drive are very popular because we often have to go through 6 inches or a foot of snow. And it certainly is much better performing than the rear-wheel drive. So that was a great accomplishment. For those who just tuned in, we're speaking with the author of Sail the World, which is available on Amazon.com. The author is Eric Reichert, a very accomplished man. And if you're listening in New York, Buffalo, Toronto, or Northern Florida, drop us a note as we blanket 17 states and much of Canada and receive letters as far away as Scandinavia, New Zealand. Please write to Brian Rusk, ESPN Radio, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. A little bit more information about Eric Reichert. He received an MBA with distinction from Harvard Business School and a BS in engineering from Northwestern University. He is married to Lady Susan and lives in Palm Beach, Florida, London, England, and Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. He has 2 children and 5 grandchildren, a very accomplished, brilliant business leader internationally. Now I want to switch to the other motor company you were involved with for many years, and I'm referring to Chrysler. So let's talk about your experience there and the products you work with at Chrysler. Eric Reichert.
Well, the reason I came to Chrysler is because of Lee Iacocca. Lee and I had worked together at Ford for many years, and when he moved to Chrysler, along with a man named Hal Sperlich. As you probably are, if you remember, Chrysler had very few good products at the time, and in fact, the K car was their sort of last dying hope.
So you're talking about the 1980s?
Yes.
Okay.
And so they brought me to Chrysler to renovate the whole product line, both cars and trucks, which we did. And it was a very lean, mean group. We were able to make decisions quick and move forward quickly. Lee is a very charismatic and dynamic leader, and he provided the impetus. And even remember, they did a loan guarantee from the government. The government actually did not loan the money.
Mm-hmm.
All they did was provide the guarantee. And Chrysler, because of what we accomplished, Chrysler was able to pay off the loan early and completely. But then I went on to do other things at Chrysler, including running powertrain operations and AccuStar, etc.
Well, Chrysler had a reputation of having superior engineering. I think they always used to brag about that. Was there truth to that?
Yes. One of the problems, or one of the issues in the automotive industry, is scale. Scale meaning how many vehicles you produce.
Mm-hmm.
And Chrysler has always been on the small side compared to Ford and General Motors. So their engineering aside, you know, they were having problems with getting enough volume to make the vehicles profitable. And that was our prime objective, is to try to make the vehicles, you know, better received.
We have a minute left on the Rusk Report. You work closely with Lee Iacocca, who is a legend in American business in the automotive industry. What was he like as a person?
Oh, he was a great leader. And of course, back in the days in the automotive industry, you know, whether it was Henry Ford II or Lee Iacocca, everyone was, most leaders were very dynamic and very persuasive. As I said, Lee was very charismatic, but one unusual thing, and he wrote several books, as most people know, but one unusual thing was he was really quite a private person. As a result, he had a small group, you know, like 10 people of close allies, which had frequent contact with him and in his office all the time, but he really didn't get out. If there was a book member called Manage by Walking Around, that is not something he did. He didn't get out and around.
I'm sorry we have to bring the Rusk Report to a close. Back by popular demand, we have the author of Sail the World, Eric Reichert, who is a top executive internationally for Ford and Chrysler. Special thanks to Kevin Carr, our director of production. And thank you for enlightening us about your book, Sail the World, available on Amazon.com, and about your experience in the automotive industry internationally. Eric Reichert, thank you for enlightening us on the Rusk Report.
Thank you.
Have a great week.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.